Mr. Nana No, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
Hello, my name is TK Kapurai and I'm an immigrant from Zimbabwe. I'm the host of The Global Cell, which airs live in the Air Room the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. I host immigrants and refugees from various global spots. I like to bring out their lived experiences so the world can know something about them. I like to bring a lot through my guests so we may have diverse experiences, cultures, foods, music, interests, and anything on the platform. We can share and learn a lot through their live instructions. Let's do this together, not only for a better platform for our community, but a better community for our platform. Again, tune in for my show, The Global Cell, live in the Air Room, the first Wednesday of the month at 7 p.m. here on KBOO 90.7 FM Portland, and also available on the web at kboo.fm.
Before we start today's interview with TJ Klun, this is KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, where we're giving the gift of grassroots community media. Help us reach our goal of $75,000 before December 31st. You can become a monthly sustaining member or make a one-time donation. 80% of our funding comes from listeners like you. Thanks for all your support of independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And thanks again.
Welcome to Between the Covers on KBOO Portland 97 FM. I'm your host this week, Avi Marr.
TJ Klun is the New York Times and USA Today best-selling Lambda Literary Award-winning author of The House in the Cerulean Sea, Under the Whispering Door, In the Lives of Puppets, the Green Creek series for adults, the Extraordinaire series for teens, and more. His latest release from Tor is The Bones Beneath My Skin. Welcome back to Between the Covers, TJ Klun.
Thank you so much. It's very nice to be here again. It's like, how many times? Is this my second? Second time. Yeah. Look at me. Look at me. Repeat guest.
Let's just call you my regular. So, Bones Beneath My Skin. Yes. I want to acknowledge we are in the moment that we are in. So, It's this very particular book, which is always a battle cry for love when it comes to books from you. How is it landing, coming out right now? Where are you at?
It's insane. The Bones Beneath My Skin originally was a self-published book that came out in 2018. And it came at a very weird time for me because I had just been picked up by Macmillan and Tor for The House in the Cerulean Sea. And my prior publisher that I had been with since 2011 was in the process of imploding. And so 2018 was a year of such highs and such lows because I got this big, huge, awesome deal that has led to so much with my new publisher. My prior publisher was embezzling from so many authors and editors and cover artists. And I had to take 20 books from them and republish all of them on my own and self-publish them all of them on my own. And in the midst of that, I published the book Bones Beneath My Skin, which was originally going to be with that independent publisher, but then I pulled it when I saw the way the winds were heading. And I had never self-published a book before, and I ended up self-publishing it and my entire catalog. And to be honest, it kind of got lost in the big bluster and noise of, oh, big new deal, oh, big bad former deal, and it's all coming together in this weird little perfect storm. So when Tor said, hey, what books do you think that you would want to republish with us? My first thought was The Bones Beneath My Skin, because it is one of, if not my favorite book I have ever written. And for fans of The House in the Cerulean Sea and Somewhere Beyond the Sea, there's a character in this book called Artemis Darth Vader. I wrote Somewhere Beyond the Sea, or I wrote The House in the Cerulean Sea after writing The Bones Beneath My Skin. The character, Artemis Darth Vader, she is a precursor to who the kids on the island would become. She was that introduction. As a matter of fact, I think that she would fit perfectly well on the island with all the other kids. She is kind of like this little extra missing part that I put somewhere else, and I adore everything about her. But the book coming out now, it's insane, because this book is a thriller set in the 90s, and I set it in the 90s for a very specific time, for a very specific reason, because of the fact that we know how the 60s look, we know how the 70s look, we know how the 80s look, we know how the 2000s look, we know what they mean, what they stand for, what things came from them, but the 90s are such a weird and chaotic, almost indefinable time. Like the 90s were the continuation of the HIV and AIDS crisis. They were the start of the Clinton era. They were Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It was Waco and David Koresh. And it was a very specific, strange little thing called Heaven's Gate, a cult that was run by a man named Marshall Applewhite. And in the 90s, a comet came to Earth called Hale-Bopp. And this cult, for some reason, believed, and Marshall Applewhite believed, that there was an alien craft in the tail of this comet, and that he and his cult would ascend into what this enlightenment, into this other world. And what happened is that they all died by suicide, and they believed that this would happen. So a writer's brain is a very strange place, because the biggest thing that can happen to a writer are two words: what if? And so I've written many stories based upon the idea of what if. And so I had this idea: what if Marshall Applewhite, what if Heaven's Gate was right? What if there was something that was coming? What if we didn't know about it? What if there was this idea of ascension and whatnot? And what if that? Here's the cool part about this, though. Here's the absolutely insane part. Heaven's Gate as an idea still exists. The Heaven's Gate website is still up and active. It looks exactly like it did in the 90s. It looks like a 90s website. And when I was writing this book, I emailed back and forth with the people who run the Heaven's Gate website, who are still active in Heaven's Gate, even though they are not dead. They are not, you know, they have not ascended. They basically keep, in their words, the legacy of Marshall Applewhite alive. And so I was able to talk to them a little bit about what it was like to know Marshall Applewhite, what it was like to know a cult leader, because we always hear stories of people like David Koresh or Jim Jones or Marshall Applewhite, how charismatic they have to be in order to manipulate the people who come into their orbit. And that's exactly what he sounded like. If you are not from the 90s, if you are of a time that came after, you can watch Marshall Applewhite's videos on YouTube. He recorded himself and his thoughts and his processes and everything. And it's very eerie. It is extraordinarily eerie. So this book exists because of what if. What if, and the whole thing came from there. But I have to say that the book didn't originally start as that. The book in 2015, I had this idea of 2015. I wanted to write a book about a group of teenagers, a group of 13, 14-year-olds, kind of like in the way of Stephen King's It or Robert McCammon's Boy's Life, a group of boys who come together to protect a special girl that moves to their town. And I thought that would be a really cool idea to do an adult novel about kids protecting this person. What happened a year later? Stranger Things came out. And I was like, oh, there goes that idea. So I had to manipulate it a little bit and go a different direction with it. And that's how The Bones Beneath My Skin came to be.
So your commitment to the queer community, you write books that build worlds that are lenses into trans rights and our shared humanity. Is there a way that this book, publishing it in this moment in particular, again, reminds you of any facet of why you wrote it in the first place?
Absolutely. So the main character in this book, his name is Nate. He is coming from a place of significant trauma. This is a time, again, this is the 90s, a time when we were still, the homophobia was astronomical. I mean, transphobia and homophobia are through the roof right now, but in the 90s, it was for people of that era could be considered worse. We were ostracized. We were hurt. We were beaten up and killed. We were dying because of HIV and AIDS. And so to be able to write what is essentially a queer action movie, a queer thriller, and set it in a time when queer people were ostracized, when queer people were frowned upon or told to live in the shadows. Don't ask, don't tell. Okay. To be able to have these characters be front and center is extraordinary, specifically though, because of the fact that there's a character like Nate, who when you meet him, he is a broken man. He is not broken in the way Linus Baker is. He's not broken in the way Wallace Price is. He's not broken in the way, say, any of the robots were in the Lives of Puppets. He's broken in a very real human way, mm-hmm. because of the consistent tragedies that have befallen his life as of late, and because of some very serious choices that he made that should not have been made. Mm-hmm. And so when we meet him, he is broken, he is beaten down, he is feeling lost, but then he finds purpose. Then he finds hope. He finds a path in the form of two people who come into his life in a very strange way. And I think that's important. We can feel broken. We can feel beaten down. We can feel like we're at the end of our rope. But here's the thing. We can continue on. We can take a breath. We can take another step. And if we can take another step, we can keep moving. And that's what I think this book is about. And I think that is important right now more than ever.
I was about to say. That is right. I mean, that is sort of the question right now, is sort of the wrestling with hopelessness and ignorance. Mm-hmm.
But see, hope comes in many forms. And there's the idea of toxic hope, when hope is becoming all you know, and that you aren't letting, you know, you're letting it fog everything else. But I can't live in a world without hope, because if you live in a world without hope, that means that you are either content with the way things are, or you've given up. And I'm not either. I'm not given up, and I'm not content. I'm very upset. I'm very angry. And I think that there's a time when, especially right now, as we're recording this, it's a week post-election. I think there's a time when that we as a group should be allowed to feel angry and feel rage and feel, you know, there's moments in the past week that I felt petty and vindictive. There's moments when I felt that I wanted to be outright cruel. That's not who I am, but I felt that way. And that's okay to feel that way. I may not act upon it. I may keep it in my head and, you know, think mean thoughts about people, but everyone is entitled to feel that way. Everyone's entitled to be upset and all of that. But again, so long as you don't let it become all you know, it's the opposite of toxic hope. You can't let that become all you know, but you can't let rage and anger become all you know. There has to be a mixture of the two. You have to keep the fires burning in control.
Yeah. Can I ask a nerdy writer question?
Yes.
Because I know we'll be coming back around to that topic. But my first, probably not last nerdy writer question is, I was just thinking about, you know, because reading in the afterwards what you were saying about when you brought this book to the publisher and they said, this one's really weird.
Yeah.
And I was just sort of imagining being you in this moment, and there are so many writers out there who, you know, they're like, you say, it's like one of your favorite books, mm-hmm. and you bring this thing that you love and the person's like,
So the prior publisher that I was with, the one that was going under, They gave this weird mandate where they said, we'll publish anything you write. Anything you write, you want to give it to us. And so I sent it into them. And this is before I had an inkling of the way things were going. And I sent it into them. And I wasn't supposed to be privy to that comment. How I found out about that comment was from my editor at the publisher. And she told them that the owners and the publisher had sent it over to her and saying, hey, TJ Klune has a new book. It's a weird one. And then they started giving me pushback saying that, well, we don't want to market this as a traditional romance because there's only one sex scene in the book. And I remember thinking, keep in mind, this is a publisher that had just recently published a book called How to Be a Normal Person by me that is about asexuality, about how the characters are asexual, how me, an asexual person, Why do you have to have sex to believe that people can be together? Why does there have to be graphic on page coitus for to be, if you don't believe it, that people in my books are falling in love with each other, both romantically and or platonically, and that you need that extra oomph to actually believe that, then I failed as an author. That's not how it is. So that perfect little storm, the weirdness. And look, who am I now? I'm the guy that wrote a character that's a vacuum cleaner with social anxiety. I created Chauncey, of all people. You know, I wrote Wallace Price and a ghost dog. I'm weird. I love weirdness. My weirdness isn't something to be denigrated. I want to celebrate my weirdness. For so long, as a kid, even growing up into my 20s and 30s, I was told that my weirdness was not okay, that it was not a good thing, that it made me different. You know what? My weirdness is what makes me unique. It's my brain, my thoughts, my imagination is weird, yes, but there are so many people out there who have the same kind of weirdness, who enjoy those kinds of things. So that word weird was that, when I heard that, it was very much like a PTSD flashback of like, oh, this feels, it's not bullying, but it the connotation of that word weird. To me, weird is wonderful. To me, weird is cool. To them, that was in the opposite meaning of that. So I'm glad that I get to publish my weird, wonderful novel with a publisher who says, give us more weird, make it weirder.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Between the Covers with our guest, TJ Klune. If you're enjoying this conversation, you can show your support by helping KBOO with our annual Catalog of Connections year-end campaign, by contributing toward our $75,000 goal. If you like what you hear, consider becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. And thanks again. I mean, I like that as a message to writers, like, amp it up. You know, if someone's telling you,
don't
put yourself in a category.
Write it what you want to write. Be as weird as you want. It's fiction. It's not real. It is fiction. It's allowed to be weird.
So I would like to have us sort of feel the tone of the book, if that's possible. So can you read a little tiny bit?
Why did you keep coming back? Alex shook his head, and even before he spoke again, Nate could see the wall shoring back up. It doesn't matter, he said gruffly. It's not about me. It's about her. It's about getting her home. How? Nate asked, suddenly feeling the smallest he'd ever felt. If this were real, if this were all true, nothing would ever be the same. He wanted to think they were crazy, that they were liars. But he'd already seen things he couldn't explain when it came to Artemis Darth Vader, and no matter how he tried to force it away, it still washed over him, pulling him under. Don't quite know yet, Art admitted. They're coming back for me. I can feel it. Her voice took on a dreamy tone. It's like a song in my head. I can hear them singing and I know they'll return. I just have to wait. And then she fell silent. Nate felt drops of rain on his head and shoulders. The storms would be on them soon. They were waiting on him. He just didn't know what to say. Finally, he said the only thing he could. Why? She arched an eyebrow at him. That's vague. Why what? He felt hollowed out and empty. Why here? Why us? Why did you come here? He brushed away a tear that spilled down his cheek. And when she leaned forward, when she put her small hands on his face, he did not flinch. You think yourself alone. You think yourself lost. We wanted to show you that there was so much more than this place. We didn't come to hurt you. We didn't come to save you. Only you can do that. We came to be your friend. To make you understand that in the end, you are never alone. After that, Nate drifted.
So I love that it's like a little drop in.
This is a good book.
Do you like two?
Yeah, see, what was cool about getting to republish like the Green Creek series and The Bones Beneath My Skin is to go back to books that have been years removed. For example, Wolf Song, when the Green Creek series was re-released last year, and I was doing superficial edits in the year before. That was the first time I'd read the book since I had written it, really. And that was in, I started writing that book in 2014. So getting to come back to some of my older works shows me that A, I've gotten better, but also that I had some pretty neat ideas for things and that some of them worked out, some of them didn't. But I think The Bones Beneath My Skin is one that just, it is such a cool book. It is such a cool book that I will never write a sequel to. There never needs to be a sequel. There never needs to be more in this world with these characters, because this story has a beginning, middle, and end that I think works so well for Art, Nate, and Alex.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like, just from that example, that one of the themes or one of the questions you're hanging out with in this book is the feeling of being alone versus the need to be connected to someone else, even if it's really hard to figure out how.
Right. And we through, you know, not to do any spoilers, but we see that through the text that there are three main characters, Art, Nate, and Alex. Nate and Alex are the adults. Art is the child, weirdo, wondrous, mysterious thing. And they each have their own reckoning with that idea of loneliness versus the need for connection. Each one of them has that arc throughout the book. So what happens when you put three desperately lonely beings together who find hope and solace with each other? You want to build that up. While obviously in the book and through the text, other people are trying to tear that down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing I loved about it was, I guess, again, in our very painful moment, I loved reading about a being that just appears. Mm-hmm. And what happens when human beings try to understand that being?
Right, exactly. Because it's inhuman. And we have this idea of what some kind of inhuman contact would be. And by inhuman, I mean not of this earth. Mm-hmm. But I think that we have no idea what it would be like. It's all just guessing. I mean, I'm sure that somebody has written a story that if it happens, they'll be like, oh, it's kind of like that book. Yeah, exactly. That's what happened. But we don't know. We don't know how inhuman things would act. We don't know how inhuman things would view us. So instead of focusing on such a huge big picture all the time, I love the idea of this inhuman being getting quirks, getting little ticks, getting little things that they love and like when they find themselves surrounded by human beings.
Mm-hmm. But one of the things kind of a tragic element of it was, what's it met with but fear and the desire to control it?
Exactly. Because what happens with things we don't understand? We want to try to understand them. And how do we try to understand them? By beating them down and controlling them. So that way, if they prove to be a threat, we are already one step ahead. That's people wonder if there's aliens, if the universe is so vast and it's possible to travel, why has there been no actual real proof of contact or whatever and all that? Do you ever stop to think that Earth kind of has like this
keep going
for this like for rent sign, here. Universal for rent sign hanging above like that only the rest of the world, the rest of the universe can see? I don't know. It's you know, I've said before that I do not like people. I love humanity because humanity gave us books and music and art and movies and dancing and all of this wonderful thing, but people just suck.
I think that's what I mean where I feel like, when I was thinking about interviewing you, I was like, do we engage with that? Or because you see her, does she want to educate it? Mm-hmm. Does she want to, and then she falls into learning to love and deciding to love.
Right, exactly. She's very, Artemis is in a way almost like a scientist. She is very analytical. She studies each and every little movement. You see that almost right away when she is caring for Alex when the group first meets. You see that, but you also see her watching Nate. And as a matter of fact, one of my favorite things about this book, it's such a dumb little idea, but my favorite thing about her is her focusing on how bread becomes toast. And how that relates to people, how that relates to human beings, that one thing can change to become another, but it can't change it back.
Can't go backwards, yeah.
Right. So what does Nate, what is he going to look like, as she says, when he's been toasted? And I just love that little idea that it's such a kid way of thinking, but it's also almost kind of alien, because let's be frank, kids are little aliens. They're little weirdos who are coming online with their consciousness and their subjective and their opinions, and they don't have a filter, so the weird things come out of their mouth. I think that's how it would be with a non-human being, with an alien, with a non-human entity. I think that they would be almost like a kid, because they would not have the filter of cynicism and that comes with humanity.
Well, I also think another small piece to add to what you're saying, when she talked about the Roswell guys, and she was like, yeah, they're just mean. And like, what's with the probing? And I think that, you know, that kind of, you juxtapose this sort of, what does interest look like, right?
Right, exactly.
We intrude, colonize, and attack, or do we open and soften to something? And I don't know. I feel like
what I love about art, and when she's mentioning the quote unquote gray aliens, the grays, how she basically says they're just jerks. It's just like, it's such a human thing that it's so funny that she's adapted into this kind of language that she has, and I just think that's so funny.
So it also felt to me like the struggle to be human is the other beauty.
Right. Well, what is it? That's the whole idea. What does it mean to be human? What exactly does it mean? At the end of the book, can you say that art is human? Can you say that she is a human being? I will not want to spoil the book at all, but her journey, does she become human? What does that mean? What does it look like when an otherworldly being becomes human? And what does that look like for Nate and Alex, who become more human? Because Alex has an awakening through the book. Nate has an awakening through the book. And they do, because what it means to be human is different from art than what Alex thinks, than what Nate thinks. So you have these three disparate ideas of what it means to be human coming together. It could almost be like a sociological experiment. What would happen? Three lonely people with three different views in the world coming together, and what could they do? It's, in a way, it could be considered almost a precursor for the idea of Somewhere Beyond the Sea and the House in the Cerulean Sea, a child like Lucy being put with somebody like Arthur Parnassus. What would that look like? A child who's supposed to be the most destructive thing the world has ever known. But what happens when he's raised by a man who's filled with compassion and empathy and hope? You don't have to be the thing that people tell you you're going to be. You can be something so much more and something so much different.
I feel like in some ways that's what art is sort of bumping up against, and that character, the voice of that discovery, is part of what this character is about.
Even though art is not the main character, the book's point of view is from Nate's, but I wanted to kind of see it through her eyes. Like, if you think about it, you go to an alien world, you're going to be looking at everything to see how different it is and how different the people, the flora, the fauna, all of that kind of thing is. So I kind of wanted her to be that. She is, as I said, she's very analytical. She studies every single little thing. So you almost see through her eyes, and you can see when she makes connections to things. And it's, in a way, it's like a child learning when they're making connections to things, but she is not quite a child.
But I also think there's a wisdom that she shows where she can let things be next to each other that we can't bear to put next to each
right.
other.
Right, exactly. Because I don't, you know, it's never fully explained. And I love the air of mystery about it. But we don't necessarily know before she came to be where she is at. Do they have things like grief? Do they have things like anger and pity and sadness and fury and, you know, hate? Do they have those things? Or is she experiencing things like that for the first time?
Can I have you read a little paragraph where she's grappling with that love?
The cords in Art's neck stood out as she tilted her head back, the wires attached to her pulling against the electrodes. I came here, she said, hands jerking, because it was the right thing to do, because I took so much from you. I came here to say I'm sorry, to tell you that I care about you, that your world is harsh and unforgiving, but there is so much beauty in it if you only know where to look. I felt it, your pain, your uncertainty, even long after you were gone. I didn't come here to take you home. I came here to show you that you already were home. And that is a really great scene. It's so funny being able to go back and discover stuff like that. Like, there's a scene.
You're surprised when you read your own writing.
I love that. There's a scene in here that I am extraordinarily proud of. This is a thriller. It's meant to be a thriller. It's a different kind of book for me. Yeah. But there is a scene in here that involves a game of Russian roulette in a way that is one of my favorite things I've ever written, because it's, I think, the tensest thing I've ever written. Because with thrillers, there have to be scenes filled with tension, not sexual tension, romantic, platonic tension, not those kind of things, but actual real world stakes. Right. And so that scene is one of my favorite, because this book allows me to show a different side of my writing, a different things that I can do.
Okay. So, you know, when they get to the farm, you switch out of first person.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me. Can you please?
I want to try different things. I want to.
What was your thinking around that one?
This was a mention of a time when Nate wasn't there, and it was getting information that he had not been privy to before. So as vague as I can possibly say that, but I wanted to do that. I love the idea of trying to do different things with your writing, trying to try new things. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But with that, I wanted it to be a sort of a story that he was witnessing, but he was also feeling at the same time.
Yeah.
that he was there, but not that he could feel the weight of the emotions, that he could feel that his senses were going off the charts, but he also wasn't really there because he couldn't be, as this was something that had already happened. So when I wrote that, I wanted to tell it in a different way. So I, to be honest, I didn't give it much thought. I immediately just switched over as I was going. Yeah. I just jumped into it knowing that it was going to be, because I'm good at telling stories. I am never going to be the best. I never want to be the best, but something I do want to be is a little bit better with each book that I write. So, and when I get to write The Bones Beneath My Skin and try something a little different,
yeah,
I get to do something like that. I wrote a book called Into This River I Drown, which is set in the same universe as this book. As a matter of fact, there's a few characters mentioned in Into This River I Drown, but that book was my attempt at mimicking Faulkner. That was my attempt at writing a Faulkner-esque story. And I took chances with that book. The entire first chapter is written in second person, and I loved being able to explore like that. Would I write an entire novel in second person? Probably not. But getting to do stuff like there's a book that I have percolating in my head that is going to have footnotes up the wazoo. So many footnotes. And I love that, because it's something different. I want to have books where, you know, a really good example is The House of Leaves. It is such a cool way to tell a story. Does it work for everyone? Absolutely not. But for the people it works for, you're like, this is like the coolest thing ever. It's
did
like
you too?
When you were a kid and reading choose your own adventure books, you know how cool that is to be able to do that? I want to write a grown-up choose your own adventure book. I don't know. I just want to do weird off the wall things that I've never done before, because I like to think it can only make me better. Even if I fail, it can be a learning lesson. It could be something that I tried that either it worked or it didn't, and now I have it in my repertoire. Now I have it in my toolkit.
You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO 97.1 FM, Portland. Our guest today is TJ Klune. If you like what you hear, please consider a donation to KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign. Just head to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And thanks for listening. Do you think at your sort of level of productivity and success that you feel more comfortable, like, I'll try it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, versus somebody who might be more fearful of failure?
Oh gosh, yes. I say that I can do this stuff because I speak from such a privileged position. I have been extraordinarily successful because of my readers and from the support of Torin McMillan. I am very lucky to be able to do what I do. So yeah, I can take those chances that another author who has not gotten as far as I have may not be able to take. That being said, right now I'm reading a queer novel that's going to be released next year, and it is the set in the 1700s. It's a take on the French version of Lalou the werewolf, and it is weird, it is strange, and it has footnotes up the wazoo, and it's a debut novel. This is a debut novel that's coming out. I'm like, this is what I want to see. This is somebody who did a weird, it's very, you know, the best comparison I can give, even though it's not necessarily related, is it reads like Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Piranesi. And it is just dense. It is lovingly, wonderfully dense. And it's a debut novel, man. I very rarely get jealous of other writers, but when I read certain books like this is a first book. That is so cool. That is awesome. So yeah, I know that I get opportunities that others might not get, but if you have a weird and wonderful idea or a unique way of telling a story, just try it, man. Maybe it won't work, but you'll never know unless you try something. I mean, how many trunk novels do I have? I have 4 or 5 books that I've written that'll never probably see the light of day.
By my choice,
because I tried something and it didn't work the way I wanted it to. And I don't, just because I tried. So that's something that people should keep in mind. You don't read everything an author writes. Trust me, there are millions of words that I've written over the last 15 years that people will never read because A, it's either me practicing, B, it's not very good, or C, it's an entire novel that it's not very good.
One of the things I liked about the change in the POV in this book was I felt like, you know, you were sort of inside of Nate's sadness, mm-hmm. and his view on the suspense and the tension and the building of what is actually happening. So we move along with his, you know, kind of rate of revelation in terms of what's going on with the other two characters. And then it feels like Art starts to rise up and we get kind of a more omniscient view of mm-hmm. the bigger picture of what's happening. So to me, it seemed like you were saying, I just wanted to try something.
Yeah, and it is. And you know, because there's the idea of show, don't tell. And I think that's BS. I think whatever. I mean, look at like Stephen King. He does a lot of showing instead of telling. And I read that stuff vociferously. I will read it. But with that moment could have been a story that Alex and Art told Nate, and it would not have had the same impact. Mm-hmm. You needed to see these people, these three people coming together in a way that wasn't possible if I had just kept it in Nate's head. Or if I had just kept it in a story that they told each other, they needed to have this kind of connection that came from that moment. This, you know, it's almost like a joining. It's almost like that they became not one, but they became a triangle. They became cohesive at that moment in time because essentially all the cards were laid on the table and they were obviously all on the same mission, all on the same path, all with the same hope. And I love that.
That's what it felt like to me, was there was that they were all became one consciousness mm-hmm.
yeah.
within that thing. So I guess that was my question, was as you're in your writing process, do you try something and then what comes out is how you find out what the book wants to say?
Yeah, that can happen sometimes. It happened with this one, obviously, because, you know, going into this, I didn't have as extensive notes as I usually have when writing it, because I just wanted to write an X-Files episode. I wanted to write, you know, because X-Files was my absolute gay awakening with Fox Mulder. And even Dana Scully, even though I knew I was gay by like age 10, even Dana Scully, I was kind of like, well, I could try it. I can knock that out of the park. What do you say? But yeah, but a lot of the ideas of humanity and hope and this joining, this cohesion came as I was writing it. And I think that is just part of me, because even if I maybe sometimes can be curmudgeonly, even if I can sometimes be cynical, you can very obviously tell I love humanity very, very much. Even with all their faults, I think it's very obvious that I love humans and what we're capable of despite our faults.
Can I have you read Art saying it a little bit in another of my favorite places?
Yeah, what's that?
2:30.
Okay. I know, she said, and he believed her. You're all capable of such great and terrible things. and in such a short amount of time. You are surrounded by millions of those like you, yet you still feel alone. You're so angry and powerful and wonderful and so fragile. You can break into pieces and feel so lost. I didn't get that. Not before. I don't think any of us did. You're complex and yet so simple at the same time. It's a dichotomy that shouldn't be possible. When you smile, it's like the sun is out. When you cry, it's like you're trapped in shadows and you can't find your way back to the light. You can hold a gun to your enemy's head and pull the trigger in the name of what you call God. You drop bombs and scorch the ground beneath your feet. You hurt each other. You love each other. You scream words that fall on deaf ears. You hate that others aren't like you. They scare you, even though they want nothing more than to be you. You make yourselves a home out of nothing. You carry each other until your knees give out and you stumble. It's almost impossible to understand. None of us could get that. Not until they felt a heart beating in a chest like I have. Not until I felt the bones beneath my skin. We're not alike, not really. We're separated by time and space, and yet somehow we're all made of dust and stars. I think we'd forgotten that. I don't know if you ever knew that to begin with. How can you be alone when we're all the same?
He's so fantastic.
It is. And what's so cool is that those beautiful, wonderful moments are interspersed by her obsessing over things like bacon or 90s wrestling stars or you know, Louis L'Amour Westerns that she reads. That's what I love, is that she is this fully realized little girl who may not be just a little girl.
Well, I think that's one of the things I love about your writing is you're operating on three levels simultaneously. That's why I love to have you read pieces like that, where you love the, you know, her cowboy dialogue and her ordering pancakes and her making fun of them, and then you get dropped into that. That I just felt like that passage was had this beautiful mm-hmm. silence to it.
It does. It feels very hushed, doesn't it? And it feels very quiet, because that's what I think. I think the biggest revelatory moments are often found in the quiet. You don't need to be loud to make change. You don't need to be loud to be heard. You don't need to be loud to change minds all the time. Sometimes it's in the quiet that you learn the truth.
I wonder about that in this moment right now. It's very quiet in a certain way, because but it's sort of bated breath.
It is. I think it feels like the sword of Damocles hanging over your head. That at any moment it could fall, but you just don't know when it's going to. And that's probably going to feel that way for a long time, to be honest. It could feel that way for a while. But at the same time, sometimes you just got to move out of the way of that sword. Sometimes you just have to get up and move to a different room and say, you know what? I am not going to sit under this sword, even if good things can happen from it.
Right. What are you working on now?
Right now, I am editing a book that comes out 2026, I think. It's not with the publisher yet. This is edits for my beta readers. It's a short novel about the end of the world, and I adore it. And I just started working on a new book this morning. I wrote the first 4 paragraphs of it because I couldn't get them out of my head. And that book is this book is already on the schedule, even though I haven't written it yet. This book that I'm currently just started writing will most likely be out in 2028.
So how many are on the pipeline at a time?
Right now I have
writers want to know about people like yeah. you who are like, this one's here, this one's there.
So The Bones Beneath My Skin is going to be out next February. And then I have 3 books that are finished and have not been announced yet.
Oh, secrets.
Yeah.
Three yet to be announced.
Yeah. So pretty much the next half decade of my life is planned at this point. And I'm excited for it. I love these. If people were hoping that I would continue to write books exactly like The House in the Cerulean Sea, then they're going to be sorely mistaken, because I think I'm leaving my cozy era and I'm entering my let's get weird again era.
I think it's one of the things about this book that it's got some edge and it's, you know, there is, like you were saying early on, there's only one sex scene, but it's pretty, you know, it's an erotic scene. It's a, you know, like your very welcoming, open tone of all for all ages. This is definitely a book for grownups.
Yes, as the Green Creek series is. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And so your movement right now, I'm interested in like where your mind is going. And
my mind is going from less of how I was feeling in 2018 and 2019, where I wanted to put goodness and kindness out in the world. Now, right now, I'm feeling I want to get down in the dirt. I want to get down in the dirt and get messy and see what kind of books I can make out of that. Not that I'm going to lose my love for humanity, not that I'm going to lose my empathy and compassion with my characters, but I do think that I need to bring the claws out again a little bit.
I want to hear more about that.
As you'll probably end up seeing in the next few books.
no spoiler alerts, but I just sort of want to kind of watch how your brain turns. Like you were saying, my cozy era might be shifting into something else, and I'm just thinking about your life.
Yeah, because look, I go from books like the Green Creek series, which are full of sex and violence and angst and heartbreak and is enough to make you know, people go through 80 boxes of Kleenexes per book. And then I can write books like Under the Whispering Door, which also make people go through 80 boxes of Kleenex, but on a different kind of wavelength. And then I can go into the future, you know, wanting to find what makes me happy, because writing will always make me happy, but finding what now interests me as a writer. I want to write a big, huge queer Western. I want to do a Louis L'Amour saw book. I want to write a huge space opera that is like a trilogy full of everything. I never want to write another sequel again. I never, you know, it's all these different ways. I'm feeling so many different kinds of ways right now. And it's just, it's going to be how I decide how I want to move forward. I don't quite know what that looks like yet, but I'm getting there. And I'm thinking it's going to be more the Bones Beneath My Skin than it's going to be the House in the Cerulean Sea.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be me wanting to explore different types of genre, because I bounce all over the place, man. I mean, that's why there were people who weren't happy when I went from fantasy of Cerulean Sea and Under the Whispering Door to science fiction of In the Lives of Puppets. I don't care about that. You don't have to like it. You don't have to read it, but I'm going to do what interests me. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but my thoughts when I'm writing aren't about what readers want. My thoughts are when I write are what kind of story is really cool and how can I tell this in the best possible way.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Between the Covers with our guest, TJ Klune. If you're enjoying this conversation, you can show your support by helping KBOO with our annual Catalog of Connections year-end campaign by contributing toward our $75,000 goal. If you like what you hear, consider becoming a member today at kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. And thanks again. I can't imagine if your thoughts are what readers want, that it wouldn't.
You'll never write the book.
Thank you.
You can't make everybody happy. So if you try, you're going to make no one happy. Write the story you want to read. Don't write the story you think readers want to read. It's why I never recommend new authors or any authors go chasing after trends. Like right now, for the past year, it's been all about romanticy. But do you think that that's going to be in 2 years? No. Cozy fantasy was 2020 because of the pandemic. It's not really the biggest thing anymore. I mean, it's not the big news, but here's the thing. If you want to write a cozy fantasy because that's what you want to do, write it. If you want to write romanticy, write it. Just don't go chasing trends, because by the time you've written your book and you've either self-independently or traditionally published it, it's going to be a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. You turn into a book to a traditional publisher, that book is not coming out for at least 2 years, at least.
I think you're the one who taught me that last time we talked, is if you've noticed a trend, it'll be gone.
Yeah, it will absolutely be gone. I mean, and romanticy is just a different packaging of fantasy romance that was popular in the 80s, that was popular in the 90s, that's popular in the 2000s. Mm-hmm. Romance is always going to be popular. They just found a fun new name to put on it and try to market it. It's a marketing thing. That's all it is.
Yeah. Or how to package. And if you package yourself, aren't you already making yourself smaller?
Right, exactly. So don't write to chase trends. Write to what you want to write. That's all you have to do.
Can I ask you a different question?
Yeah.
Do you think your level of kind of hermit living helps you keep your mind open to all possibilities, no matter what's going on out there?
Oh, absolutely. The less I deal with people, the better off I am. I am so much, you know, because I just spent September and October traveling all over North America, getting to meet talk with people. Yeah, because I was on a 6-week book tour for Somewhere Beyond the Sea. And by the very end of that, my social battery was at zero. And when I need to recharge my social battery, isn't it something that is simple as recharging it one day or 2 days or a week? It takes me some months to recharge my social battery. And plus, my brain has always been extraordinarily loud. And I'm not talking me as a person being loud, even though I am. I'm just talking my brain has always been loud. So if I get to be in quiet, that means that my brain doesn't have to be competing for attention for anything else, you know, because my ADHD will kick in. I like the quiet because it helps me think. It helps me focus. Absolutely. I am the most productive. Well, I won't say that, because there was times when I was in working 60 hours a week and still somehow publishing 3 books a year when I was just starting out. But I am the best I've ever been with the quality of my work now, and I'm the happiest I've been in a very long time. And I think that's important.
When you found the right level of aloneness to...
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Exactly. If I want to talk to people, I can go meet with friends, or I can go down into town that's 10 minutes away. But if I don't want to, like this weekend, I didn't leave my house. I mean, I went hiking with my dog and went out into nature, went out to public, but I didn't go to the grocery store. I didn't go do anything. It was me alone in my head. And it was wonderful because I'm getting that itch again where I'm ready to start a new book. And that's all I'm thinking about.
So do you not get bothered by sort of distractibility? Like, you've talked about your ADD with me before, but does the kind of silence around you keep your hyper-focus, like your front line?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because I'm not distracted by cars outside. I'm not distracted by people knocking on my door. Because before I moved here, I live in the suburbs in Virginia. And I lived in a neighborhood with an HOA, and your grass had to be this long, and community garage sales and block potlucks and picnics. That's my literal version of hell. So I finally got out of the suburbs, and now I live in
Washington, D.C.
I still remember like one time in 2015 where I got a letter from the HOA saying that the bushes on the side of my house were getting too scraggly and I need to cut them. And I remember thinking, who thought this was a good idea? So I'm just happy that I don't have to deal with that anymore. I get to be weird, and that is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a really nice commentary on what makes me in the best relationship with what I love to write. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like your privacy is a huge ingredient in that.
Oh God, yes, absolutely. Again, it's why I'm only down to one social media. It's why I don't check direct messages. It's why I don't do that. I'm a very private person, or at least I was. Now a lot of people know aspects of my life that I did not know were shared and in public, but you know, that's okay. I can deal with that. Again, I'm very lucky. Look how lucky I am. I grew up doing what I wanted to do when I was a kid. Not many people get to say that. So for any complaints that I have, they're all superficial. I get to do this every single day, and it's the best job in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm really glad you have that level of privacy around you to...
Me too.
...sort of feel that level of freedom. I think that's what people are looking for, whether they have day jobs or not.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for doing this again. And you know what? A recurring guest means that there has to be a third time. So when I'm apparently publishing 3,000 books in the next 100 years, so I'll be back.
You'll be back in 2 years. Yeah. In no time at all. See?
No time at all.
Planet. No, is that the soonest, or is it 25? You got one. You know. Yeah, no, I've got a book. This is your 25, isn't it?
This is my 25 because I some really cool things are going on that shuffled my schedule a little bit that I can't quite talk about yet. But this is going to be my only book out next year.
Leaving us with the teaser. There are things
right, and then the latter half of the year, I get to take the rest of the year off. I will not be doing any events, anything like that. We had planned for me to have time off in 2028. So now that these weird new cool things that might be happening are happening, we shifted my schedule. So this will be my only 2025 book. And then after that, I'm going to disappear for the rest of the year. And then 2026, I'm going to come back and break everybody's hearts all over again.
Well, I think there's something about sort of you, what's the word? Kind of composting.
Well, that's it. I want to give people a chance to miss me. I've been very lucky putting out a book a year, but do you know how, since I was published with Tor since 2020 and I've released 11, this will be my 11th book with them. I'm very tired.
I've ever talked to here.
I need an absolute break.
yeah. It's amazing. But I think, I just mean like in this moment in history that art's one of the few things we have to cling to. So I love that you have the room to make it and to find out what your voice wants to say.
Thank you. I'm very excited about seeing what comes next and seeing what I'm capable of. But thank you for that. And yes, I will come back, whether it be in 2026, 27, 28, we'll figure it out because I got stuff to do. And now my dog is yelling at me to go feed him. So I will talk to you later.
Okay. Thank you so much, TJ.
You're welcome. Bye.
Take care. Bye. That's our show for today. As a reminder, this is KBOO's Catalog of Connections year-end campaign. Help us reach our goal of $75,000 before December 31st. You can become a monthly sustaining member or make a one-time donation. 80% of our funding comes from listeners just like you. So thanks for all your support of independent, community-supported volunteer power radio. You can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. And thanks again.
Maybe it's the wind blowing in the rain.
That's our show for today. Thanks for listening to Between the Covers here on KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Original music from Karen Talumi.
Hiding in the clouds, I don't know why. I hear you crying out loud.
is KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy jueves 21 de noviembre del 2024.